little BG on me. I do HR, means human resources. Here at TAC, my name is Eric Rossdale. Some people call me Cool Eric. They called me that once. Some young people, too. Some young person did that. I love people, to say that another way. I love people. And that one's got a little more fun to it, doesn't it?
TBTL!
Thought I was shame eating in private.
What is shame eating?
I don't think we have enough time for that tonight.
As I tried to explain before, you cannot get honey from a hornet's nest.
I just don't think there's any science to support that, buddy.
There's some very basic science out there supporting that. Trust me, pal.
What a fun, terrifying joke.
That's science. These are facts.
In science, we call that a hypothesis. You find something to back it up and we can talk. Now, if you'll excuse me, I was watching Mama's Family.
This will be blown way out of proportion. You have my word on it.
All right. Hello, good morning, and welcome. I'm having some real issues with, you know what, just get this right. I had to switch bells. Hi, good morning. Welcome, everybody, to a Tuesday edition of TBTL.
Okay, guys, can we get to disc jockeying?
The show that just might be too beautiful to live. My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
Wait a minute. Who are you?
A guy who has a real hard time operating. It's very simple. Bell-like devices here on my desk at the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, which is perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. Welcome to episode 3015 in a collector series. This is usually where Tom Shane says, let the fun begin.
Let the fun begin.
There we go. Having some real struggles at the top of the show, including and not limited to the fact that I just tried to shorten struggles to strugs. That's like one of those things where shortening the word makes it into a word that does not convey. Like, you take trouble, you go trubs. I'm having some real trubs. People are like, I think we know what he's talking about. But if you take struggles down to strugs, it's just a noted U.S. Olympic gymnastics competitor, Kerry Strug from the 1990s. You really lose the meaning of the word. I'm having some struggles here at the top of the show, you guys, but I promise you it's going to get better when we get into the top stories, which are pretty interesting today. First of all, I'm very proud of what I've titled the first top story. A researcher here in the Northwest went out and studied birds, seagulls in particular, and has figured out what they're actually saying or what they're communicating with their different seagull calls. And I was racking my brain on what to call this particular topic, and I went with, it's literally a seagull. I was also considering talk of seagulls, but I think it's literally a seagull is way better in the sort of parlance of TBTL. So we'll talk about that. Also, a woman in Illinois was watching her sleeping baby son on the nanny cam, the baby cam that she had, and next to her son appeared the face of another child. She actually had it. She got a freeze frame of it, a still shot, and she put it out on the internet, and people were freaking out. She was freaking out. Turns out,
I am petrified. Petrified with this story.
There is an explanation of what was happening, but it's still kind of an interesting story about ghost babies. So we'll talk about that and emails and V-mails and say hello to this young man, longest running co-brogan of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships. He's trying to seduce you. He's Andrew
Fireball
Walsh, and he's joining me right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning. I want you to know I am 100% down for making strugs a thing. Like, I'm serious. I like strugs. I'm having some serious strugs. Yeah. I'm struggling this morning, man. I am struggling. I stayed out too late last night.
Yeah. I'm high on life. I just say no to strugs.
Yeah, and say no to strugs. I like it.
Yeah.
I have something to say. I don't know. This could go badly at the top, but
all right.
I don't get you're literally a seagull joke, or what am I missing?
Really?
It's literally a seagull. Is it the literal? Is it the
It's literally illegal.
Oh, okay. Okay, I don't know that drop.
It's literally illegal.
What is that?
It's literally a seagull.
What is that drop? I don't know that I know that.
That's from David Blaine. Well, you know what's funny? That's Mikey Day, who is currently a cast member on SNL. He's one of the skeletons who dances behind David S. Pumpkins, keeping
yes.
Very thematic to this time of year. And by the way, a blessed Trucktober to you.
Thank you. Also with you.
They call me Of Buhner. Every day I'm just going to do a different weird Handmaid's Tale J. Buhner type reference. And no, that was from one of the first like viral sketches that we were obsessed with on this show, which was basically the premise was David Blaine is going around doing these street magic tricks on people, but he's just being kind of rude to them.
Mm-hmm. That's the it's levitating drop. That's what that
I'm warm. What the
yeah.
F?
Yeah, right.
And I'm levitating. That was all stuff that happened from this one kind of very DIY little sketch that they shot. Mikey Day and some other folks. I don't know the rest of them. But of course, the thing that's funny about it really was their responses. What the F is from that?
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, like half of the original, like, I don't know, the 20 drops we started out with, like four of them were from that David Blaine street magic parody video.
Yeah, I remember the video. I didn't remember the drop about it's literally illegal. So that's why I missed that one. I'm actually kind of glad, though,
as much.
Because I'm yeah, I was worried it was something that I've heard a million times and I wasn't putting it together. But that one's a little bit before my time. And I don't think it I don't know if it reached canonical. That's not a word. What is the word I'm looking for? That means it's part of... Yeah,
no.
I'm definitely struggling.
Yeah, canon.
It's part of canon.
No, canonical.
Canonical. I think I was saying it wrong.
You said the same word. You pronounced it differently, which is not even to say it was incorrect. Hmm. I don't know what... I'm trying to remember how Chris Hayes would probably say it.
Canonical Run is one of my favorite goofball movies from the 80s.
Oh, my God. I'll tell you, Dom DeLuise in that is just...
He plays a bishop, I believe.
Yeah, that is... Boy, that movie is unforgettable. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, some of my strugs at the top of the show were probably also because this is the Tuesday edition of the program, but we are recording it on Monday. And we often debate, at least in our own minds, you and I, if we should we really try to pretend it's a Tuesday. But I know that if I do that, I will mess it up somehow, because as this show is being released to the listeners, I am in L.A. right now, probably standing next to Danny Trejo at a taco stand that he owns. And so for me to try to imagine what would be happening 24 hours now and pretend to be in the sunshine of L.A., that would be really difficult for me. And as my mind was debating whether or not I should try to perpetrate that lie on the listeners, that was when I was trying to play my bells and shorten the word struggle, and that was why that all went off the rails. You did say something interesting during the Monday edition of the show to me, though, which hadn't even occurred to me, which is it is a very rainy, very damp, I might even say dank time in the Pacific Northwest. There were this week six weather systems moving through, Andrew. Six different rain weather systems. In fact, our friend and now maybe my nemesis, Canute Berger, a.k.a. Mossback on Twitter, he tweeted out a picture the other day. That was like, how many different shades of gray are in this photo? And he's taken, I think, from like a ferry. And like, you have the water, then you have the sky, and then you have some clouds. And then I think there was like a fog layer. There's like eight different layers of gray. And I say Canute is my nemesis or my rival, because he likes it being colder in the summertime. He likes this gray, dank meme weather. I hate it so much. And so where I'm going with it is, I am so excited to be going to Los Angeles, California in Hollyweird, and it's going to be 90 degrees, and I am extremely there for it. And when I mentioned that to you on Monday's show, you were like, oh yeah, you would like that, wouldn't you? You didn't say it in a dismissive way, but what I was reminded of is the fact that would you rather be in this weather in the Northwest than in 85 or 90 degree sunny Southern California blue skies?
Yes. Yeah, right now, definitely.
Wow.
Yeah. LA was just too hot for me. It was like I don't know. I don't like to. I mean, listen, it's on me, and I guess I have a personality type. But I know there are other people like me out there. There's at least I don't know, dozens of us.
Knute Berger.
Yeah, who don't like to who have trouble dressing for hot weather anyway. Like, I was always very uncomfortable in L.A., but I'm not going to wear shorts to work. Like, that's not my thing. And also, I'm not a super, like, comfortable guy wearing shorts and flip-flops anywhere, really. Like, I like to wear jeans and a button-down shirt. Now, of course, I would wear short-sleeve shirts there, but, like, generally speaking, like, I just... You know, in places that have hot climates like that, like, I just want to get inside as fast as possible back to air conditioning so I can stop sweating. I'm a real sweater.
Huh.
In the clear
I think
there.
This has to do with how much clothing you're wearing, maybe. Something very strange happened to me a couple years ago. Maybe it was longer than that, which is I started to really love hot weather. Now, maybe that's just the beginnings of me becoming a snowbird. Presumably, you know, elderly people, and I'm trying to use this actually more accurately than we tend to on this show, you know, people in their, let's say, 70s and 80s, 70s are probably not elderly, but let's just say people older than us, love to go where it's warm. That's a whole thing. And I'm already becoming one of those people. Like, I'm so excited to be where it's warm, because as I'm sitting in this room right now, it also probably doesn't help that I'm just wearing a t-shirt. I'm cold. I'm legitimately in my bones cold, and I want to be somewhere warm where it will warm up my bones. Mm-hmm. And like, It does not bother me when the sun does that thing. In fact, I kind of like it, which is weird, because I wasn't always that way. When I was a kid and we would go to visit my family in Philadelphia, if it happened to be the summertime, now let's just say the humidity in Philadelphia, a place like Philly, can be oppressive, as it can be in D.C. and lots of places. But like, I love warm weather now. And if I could live somewhere where it was 85 degrees year round, I would.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't. The heat down there was a little bit much for me, and not to get super personal, but I got ear infections for the first time in my life. I never, Whoa. Ever had gotten ear infections, but I'm sure it was from, you know, working in radio and podcasting from my apartment there and wearing headphones all the time in that weather. Like, it just, everything just felt uncomfortable.
You suffered a work-related injury.
That's right. You know what? You're right. I should have actually sued.
If we would have worked
American
for APM,
Republican.
Then you would have had some kind of a...
I think for at least one of
claim.
Them I did. Yeah, I think one of them I was at KCRW, but still, I think, you know, I have to wear headphones for that job too. And I think the other I was with APM, I could have sued two different employers over this. Well, I don't know. Is it sue? You don't sue. You file a workman's comp, I guess.
Sue them for what?
Right.
I guess is the real question.
New ears.
Well, anyway, I'm excited to go down there and get a
dry
little bit
out
of
a little bit.
Get a little sun, dry out. Although, let me tell you, now the latest with my, remember last week I was singing the praises of my new skincare routine. This last weekend, I was having an odd, like, rash on my neck, almost like I had had when you would rub your – actually bump up part of your body against stinging nettles, we called them as a kid, or like a poison oak or something. Mm-hmm. That like histamine release in your body. I totally had that over the weekend, and I was like, what is going on? And I was asking Carrie what her theories were, and she goes, well, have you changed anything about your skincare routine? And I was like
– That's my wife.
Absolutely, I have. I'm now washing my face with this other stuff. I go, but I'm not washing my neck with it. She goes, it's probably that, though. Mm. So I've got to, like, go off of that for a little while and see if that's what's been causing it. But then I've got, in the words of Liz Lemon, I'm also battling winter dryness. Mm-hmm. So not only do I have too much oil in some parts of my face, which is causing pimples, but I don't have enough oil in other parts of my face. I'm dealing with some classic combination dry skin.
I think it's... Things pretty amazing that we're now learning that listener Jay was trying to poison you with the new facial mm-hmm. products that she gave you at the live boat
yeah,
show.
Yeah, and it almost worked, that's, Jay.
Yeah. Good thing you caught that early.
Yeah.
Secondly, I told you while we're just talking skincare here, I told you about a very disconcertingly large pimple that
unicorn
was
horn?
Popping up right in the middle of my forehead. I thought it was maybe a unicorn horn by the end of last week. Boy, that pimple really became kind of a a third character in my relationship all through the weekend. Genevieve had no qualms about letting me know how bad it looked while we were out over lunch one day. I met some friends who I didn't know they were in from out of town. Actually, our coworker Andy Cruz. Some listeners might remember that name.
Oh, yeah.
He and his wife happened to be in Seattle, and they texted me and said, "Hey, you want to grab dinner?" So we did. Went to the Zigzag Room down there near the market.
Yeah.
It's kind of nice little restaurant, not super fancy, but nice and a little trendy. I like that place. As far as trendy places,
famous. They're famous for their bartending.
Oh,
they have very very. They have like great bartenders there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I had to leave my hat on at dinner the whole time because I honestly thought, and it's dark in there, but like there was no way I was going to sit here with these two folks and have them stare at this thing that was really problematic by Friday night. Like it was.
Did the hat cover
gross.
It?
Gross. It doesn't cover it up because I know some people might think, well, that pimple is probably the result of wearing a hat all the time. It wasn't part of the, it wasn't under the band of the hat, but the brim of the hat definitely concealed it enough. I was wearing my little green commie hat. And so I wasn't huge on sitting at dinner with my hat on the whole time.
Such a small amount of your face is usually visible to the outside world. That's, again, very smart of you. So you, although you would have, like, had you not had the pimple, you would not have worn the hat to dinner.
I don't think, I mean, to dinner I would have worn it, but I would have taken it off during dinner. I don't usually eat with a hat on, especially because it was kind of it's not a super fancy place, but it was a nice enough place. I felt a little weird just sitting there with my hat on the whole time, but I don't know. I mean, honestly, though, it wasn't even, as much as you can believe this statement, it wasn't even about me being embarrassed. Hey, I got a pimple. People have pimples. It was really gross to look at. Like, this thing was just, this is what they call a 100-year pimple. I hadn't had a pimple like this. I mean, probably since I was, going through adolescence or something. It was something. But it's,
by the way, second,
it's kind of
second most
now.
Popular Tom Jones song is "You Can Eat With Your Hat On."
Oh, yeah. I hate that song so much.
Not as much sensuality as "You Can Leave Your Hat On," but it's, there's a decent B-side. I think it's interesting what people get embarrassed around and not embarrassed around. And I can tell you that when I have a prominent pimple, it is all my brain can think about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, 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 very embarrassing to me. There are other maladies or other things that could happen. Of course, I can't think of anything off the top of my head. But there are other things that could happen that would not make me feel self-conscious at all. And what I think it comes down to is it a real problem that you have, or is it just a once every 100-year thing?
Mm-hmm.
Because you've not suffered from pimples. So if you get a pimple, it's almost a novelty. It's like, oh, wow, this is what that's like. You're not like in your mind going, is this the rest of my life? Is this going to come back? Am I going to keep, am I going to keep growing a unicorn horn? And again, the problem with this observation for me is that I don't have any sort of supporting evidence. But it's there are things – basically, when something happens to a person that's not the normal thing that happens to them, I think it's much easier for that person usually to just be kind of cash about it, because it does not – you are not worried that this is the new reality of your life.
Yeah.
Whereas there are things that if they've happened a lot, like if I get a pimple, like right now, so I'm going down to LA, I would say the pimples are largely under control, but I was shaving and I kind of nicked myself and it's sort of near my mouth and I think it's going to be fine by tomorrow, but I'm definitely on high alert around it of like, what's that going to look like?
Mm-hmm.
Or is my histamine rash going to be in full, in sort of full bloom when I'm talking to Danny Trejo? Noted flawless skin ever, Danny Trejo. I guess if there's a person I should be interviewing, it's him.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's gonna. He's gonna draw more attention from the camera in terms of craggy face than I am. So I guess that part kind of worked out.
Do you think it's? Let's just continue the new tradition of me using TBTL to expose all of my flaws and. It's not like we weren't doing that already, but now I'm just like really leaning into it and admitting that I don't know anything about anything, especially pop culture. But do you find it surprising that I didn't really know who Danny Trejo was until this kind of recent renaissance in the past 10 years when he started appearing almost like it's funny that Danny Trejo would be in this Snickers commercial. Like, that Snickers commercial, when everybody was so excited about Danny Trejo being in this Brady Bunch-themed Snickers commercial, which would have been probably about six Super Bowls ago that thing debuted, everybody thought it was so hilarious. But that was my kind of like, oh, that guy's Danny Trejo. Okay. Like, I kind of missed all the original stuff that would make it funny that he would be in a Snickers commercial.
I didn't know much about him until maybe Machete, which, to be honest with you, I didn't even see the movie. I just knew that he was in it and that it was, you know, kind of a cult hit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't remember the exact time when he came into my awareness. It was before the Snickers commercials, but not like way before. So it's not like I'm not a cineast. So I don't know, like, every movie that comes out, and I'm also not into some of the kinds of movies that I think, like, were featuring Danny Trejo, which mm-hmm. I don't know if they were, like, you know, like, kind of self-aware, like, fake exploitation films or what. Like, the kinds of movies that Danny Trejo would originally show up in and be a sort of tough guy. And this is after he lived a very complicated life. He did time in jail. He had drug addiction problems. He had violence in his background. And now he's been sober for a long time. And he's got these really popular taco restaurants, which is actually the kind of in point for me talking to him, because I think we're going to try to get the story in the food show of CBS Sunday Morning. So it's kind of like, hey, that kind of that rugged looking guy from TV actually makes tacos and he's a big sweetheart. But really the thing I want to do is find out about his life. One of the things I find fascinating is he's 5'6".
Oh, wow.
Like, you would think he's 6'4" and literally carrying a machete at all times. He just seems so like – his physical presence on screen is really big and he's very memorable. But I don't think he's physically as big, although he's also 68. So who knows what he started out at. Maybe he's been shrinking for a while like we all are. But, yeah, I don't think you should feel embarrassed about that. I mean, it does make you slightly racist, but I think we all knew that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would like to, if I can turn things around, without the use of the internet, I'm just going to say two words here, totally on my own. Nicole Kidman. Look whose name I was able to just conjure. Wow. I'm facing my demons. I now remember the name of Australia's number one actress.
That's great. That's real growth for you, that you just like – you're like a kid who was afraid to jump off the high dive.
Mm-hmm.
And you just said, you know what? The fear ends today. I'm going to walk up the stairs. I'm going to get to the end of the high dive and I'm going to jump off. Would you – as a kid, would you have jumped off the high dive? Not dive.
Not,
jump.
Not the – probably not the highest dive. I'd probably be more likely to do it as a kid. I actually think my fear of heights has gotten much worse in the past, like, mm-hmm. 15 years. I was scared of heights very much as a kid, but then as a high schooler and college student, I began to love roller coasters and went on some of the world's tallest roller coasters, which I now cannot go back on. For me as a kid, it would have been the climbing up the ladder that would have been the worst, and then being up there. It was definitely – I have no fears of water, which that might sound like, boy, really – really lowering the bar when I'm talking about, like, I'm not afraid of water, a scared of water. But I do have people in my family, like, I have aunts and uncles who are, like, they have a phobia of water, of swimming. They would not go out into
that.
A lake or a pool. I loved it. I took to water like a duck.
I actually totally get that, being afraid of the water. Like, and I also, it's funny because, yeah, there's about 90% of the stuff that I pulled as a teenager, like in terms of jumping off of high things and backflipping off of bridges or whatever, you couldn't pay me enough to do that stuff
mm-hmm.
now.
Mm-hmm.
I will dive off a regular height diving board still, but anything north of that, and it's like, is that worth it? Is that how I want this to end?
What's a regular height,
mobility?
By the way? Is like regular height just like a few, like a foot or two off the water?
Yeah, maybe 3 feet mm-hmm. over the water or something. And then the high dive is you got to climb up that big ladder. And that was – I was really, as a kid, that was my whole thing in the summertime. Go down to Green Lake and, like, me and my friends would just try to stunt each other. Speaking of roller coasters, really quick, we should go to the break. We're running late, per usual. But are you excited about this new documentary coming out about this – amusement park in New Jersey that was called Action Park? I believe the movie's called Class Action Park.
I didn't know that that's what it's called. I think I saw one headliner tweet about it with a screen cap, and it did catch my interest, certainly. It's about an amusement park where just so many things have gone wrong over the years.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the prominent people interviewed in is our new friend Chris Gethard, actually, who grew up in New Jersey.
I didn't know that.
There was this park called Action Park in New Jersey, and it was run by this guy who was just kind of a little bit of an oddball, and his son – I don't think the guy's alive anymore, but his son is actually interviewed in the documentary, and his son wants to sort of counter a few of the narratives around this park. But basically, the story on this park was that the guy just wanted to have really fun, kind of scary rides, and he was kind of into building some of them, but he didn't really know what he was doing. Six people died at the park. Now, granted, they were mostly drownings, but there was just all manner of Like, he would just – he had this thing called the Alpine Chute, which was this kind of like a – like imagine like a sort of a luge track but not related to the snow, just like a – almost like a water slide that doesn't have water in it, that doesn't go into water, where you ride on these little carts. But you could go way too fast with it. People would get hurt so much on the Alpine track. The guys from Jackass, at least some of them – made a movie that I think is – I know you're not really into the whole Jackass world.
I know this movie. Yeah, go ahead.
Action Point, which is – I feel like it was really – maybe it kind of did – it kind of went under the radar at its time. But I think – I honestly think it's a genius premise for a movie. If you're into those kinds of shows where people are falling off things and hitting themselves in the junk, it's basically a fictionalized movie. It's about a guy who starts this – it's based on Action Park. The place, the real place in New Jersey. But Johnny Knoxville plays that guy, except the name of the park is different. But what they – so he's kind of wants to build this amusement park. He kind of doesn't know what he's doing. It's kind of dangerous. But this is, I think, the genius element. The stunts in the fictionalized movie that Johnny Knoxville did are real.
I remember that.
It combines that sort of Jackass thing of like – so Johnny Knoxville really is going off of these unsafe things and really flying through like buildings and like – shit like that, like it's really happening, but then it's woven into kind of, and I'm sure my guess would be the acting leaves something to be desired. It's probably not the most well-written movie of all time, but I thought, oh my god, that's an I watched the trailer and honestly I was laughing my ass off. Like when you see Johnny Knoxville flying off something and getting kind of hurt, it makes me laugh for some reason. But anyway, the documentary looks amazing to me. I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's called Class Action Park.
Yeah, I need to watch that. I think it's going directly to streaming, right? I think it's a Netflix-y thing. I could be wrong about
probably.
That.
I mean, I doubt that there's a huge like theatrical audience for it, but I'll give that a day in court, as our friend Camaro Kev says.
You know, I miss watching Oh, we got to go to the break. Why am I just extending a conversation with bullshit? But I will just say I miss going to see documentaries in the theater. Like when I first moved to Seattle, I feel like I was going to more of the – a bunch of them have closed down since I've been here, but not – my fault, I don't think, but Seattle used to have a whole bunch of really old school theaters, some in pretty bad disrepair, including the one on the university in the university district on the Ave there. But
the Grand Illusion.
Is that the Grand Illusion?
The Varsity?
Varsity. I'm thinking of the Varsity. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
There was another one called the Grand Illusion that like you probably never even noticed. It was like Katie Corner from the Jack in the Box on the Ave. And it like a weird place. Like it was.
It might still exist.
Almost like you were in some kind of in someone's living room. And it was always like. Is there a guy with a John Clayton ponytail about to come around the corner, right. Start eating an apple, right. And like try to snuggle with me? This room is weird to me.
I think that place might exist because I didn't know it was there, but then I saw recently before the latest Tarantino movie came out, they were like showing Pulp Fiction on like whatever, what is it, 16mm? I don't know. But anyway, I loved that feeling of going to like there was a little theater near my house where I would sit up in the balcony and like if it was a Saturday afternoon and Genevieve wasn't, because Genevieve's not really down for going to documentaries in the middle of the afternoon, but I would love it. Go to an old theater, sit in the balcony, watch some random documentary because it happens to be what's playing at the theater that day. I'd love that vibe. I haven't done it in a while.
Yeah. Okay, let's take a quick break, and then we will come back, and I'm going to quiz you, Andrew, on how well you speak Siegel.
Great.
Okay?
Jason Siegel? Because...
Yes. The work of Jason Segel. We're going to start with How I Met Your Mother and work our way up to I Love You, Man.
That would actually be a good quiz. You could play, you could give me quotes, and I have to guess if it's Jason Segel or a seagull.
Oh, man.
If we only had more time.
I'll never get over the time that I saw Jason Segel in that airport lounge in Chicago, and I really knew it was over for Burbs.
I don't get it again.
You don't remember that? I must have told you. I know that I talked about this on the show. A long time ago in my life, well, 30 pounds and 10 years ago, people used to tell me that I looked a little bit like Jason Segel, or that I reminded them of Jason Segel. And it was one of those things that it happened enough. It wasn't just aspirational on my part. It was like it would come up like once a week. So I was like, there must be something to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I, you know, continued to drink heavily and eat generally poorly and not take great care of myself. And one day, I don't know, this was maybe a year or two ago, I was in the airline lounge at O'Hare Airport waiting for my flight. And I look over and I'm, of course, you know, still probably had gotten totally lit at Rossi's the night before. And I'm just trying to probably, you know, piece myself back together, sitting there just super hungover and just feeling like dog shit. And I look over and there's actor Jason Segel, and he is like extremely fit, and he's in a suit, and he's reading a book, and he's drinking like a cup of tea or something. And I was just like, well, these paths really diverged.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like, I will. And let me just mention, in the last, I don't know, 5 years, no one has ever said to me, you look like mm-hmm. Jason Segel.
Okay, I so thought was like I was really on the edge of my seat. I thought you were going to go. I thought you were going to like misguidedly go up to him and say, "Hey, people say we look alike all the time." And then he was going to look at you and be like, "Get away from me, guy who doesn't look like me."
Even I, who have a problem with blurting out things to people, particularly famous people, that doesn't like create a good conversation. Even I had the wherewithal to be like, not today, Satan. Like, he doesn't need that in his life. Yeah. I'm not going to get a good answer out of that.
Yeah.
Like, the only good answer would be I come up to him and I say that, and he goes, oh, yeah, I see it. You look just like me. But, like, that's not what he's going to say.
He's going to start doing that mirror thing. He starts moving one hand. You start moving one
exactly.
hand.
Exactly. Yes. So that was a bitter pill, but now people tell me I look like Artie Lang, so that's good.
There you go. He's got a full head of hair, doesn't he?
Ish.
All right. Okay, let's go to a break.
Let's take a break, and then we'll be back with more TV Chill in just a moment.
Glide so swift, rain won't lift, gate won't close, feelings froze. Get your mind off winter time. You ain't going nowhere. Ooh-wee, ride behind. Tomorrow's the day.
I love this song so much.
Remember you brought this up, I think, kind of recently. You kind of went through. Is this related to a Bob Dylan documentary or something?
I think there was an article about it. Okay. It's Bob Dylan wrote it when he had just been in a motorcycle crash,
yeah.
And he was laid up in Woodstock, New York. And you know, as has been a theme on the show, every song I become obsessed with, at some point I realize it was written by Bob Dylan.
Yeah, right. I know. I remember that phase. I feel like we were playing a lot of stuff that wasn't Bob Dylan, but it was all coming back to Bob Dylan. I like this though.
Yeah. Yeah, let's keep it rolling here while I thank our donors of the day, if that's all right. And I could thank them in Bob Dylan voice.
Oh,
no, I won't.
Good. No, please. Kind of please.
Sarah Kraminsky, Portland, Oregon.
Donors are really getting
riding
their money's worth
today. On a Chinese
today.
Cat. Oh, what? I don't know if that made Sarah's day or ruined it. But thank you, Sarah, for donating to the show. Also, thanks to Kathleen Manley of Seattle, Washington, and Alan Rosencutter of Philadelphia, PA. Teresa True of Seattle, Washington. Jonna Beving of Camarillo, California. And then, of course, Gillian Lamont, or Jillian Lamont of beautiful Sammamish, Washington. Jillian, Jonna, Teresa, Alan, Kathleen, and Sarah. Thank you for not going nowhere. Oh man, I had bailed at exactly the right moment. And then
you just eased in a normal voice.
I just couldn't leave it alone. I had to try to return, as the Bible says, like a dog returns to his vomit. So a Burbank and his Bob Dylan impression are surely reunited. Thank you for donating to the show, you guys. Thanks for making it possible. We would not be here without you.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
All right. You sound very unenthusiastic about it's literally a seagull. Do you not want to do this quiz? It doesn't have to be a quiz. I could just play the sounds for you and tell you what they mean.
No, I've been looking forward to this. Why do you think I'm unenthusiastic?
When we were going to the break, I said seagull and you sounded like you just I sensed tension in your voice, like you maybe were worried you weren't going to do well.
Which, well, I probably won't do well. I don't speak seagull. I had the idea of, if we had more time, turning it into a did Jason Segel or a seagull say this would have been fun too. But no, I'm very much looking forward to this. And you also said something yesterday about me not liking the being turned off by the Columbia marching band story. I don't think that's true either.
It wasn't the story. You really did not seem to like the music.
Does anybody like the music? I mean, it was bad music.
I thought it was better than I expected it to be. And then you were like, your impression was, no, this is about what I expected it to
be. Yeah, I think so.
Not good.
It was not great. Okay, very excited about this. So lay it on me.
I will. So this is a piece in the Seattle Times that Sandy Doten wrote. What's that gull saying? Scientists think they know what gulls are talking about sometimes. She writes about this researcher. I guess actually a few of them, but only one of them is named. It's a guy named James Hayward. And they've been going out and they've been studying seagulls. And they have figured out, they think, what seagulls are saying with their common calls, what they're trying to communicate to other seagulls and what they're trying to do. So there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of these. Mm-hmm. And I'll start by saying a lot of seagull calls are just danger. They're just like, uh-oh. Okay. That's mostly what they're talking about.
Okay.
So it's a little redundant. But let's see. I'm going to play you the first one. It's called Long Call. Okay?
Okay.
So take a listen to this and tell me what you think they're saying. I want to mention these are actual recordings that this guy, James Hayward, and whoever else he was working with actually made at something called Protection Island National Wildlife Refuge, which I think is near Port Townsend. There is an island they call Protection Island that's off of Cape George, and it seems like the kind of place I would live if I was a Glaucus-winged gull, which this is the place where the majority or the largest number of those kinds of gulls happen to live.
Okay.
What do you think they're saying with that call?
I think they're saying that dog that's barking, that is not my dog. Mm-hmm.
Ah, you're so close.
Giving myself a bell.
No? Yeah, you should.
Thank you.
This call conveys the message, I am here and this is my space.
Oh my gosh.
That is what it sounds like.
That's what I need. I need a little bit more seagull in my own personality, right? Walk into a room with that kind of attitude.
Yeah, exactly. You walk in and go, y'all, the Walsh is here, and this is his space. If you hear a seagull doing that, that's what they're saying to you. They're like, I'm here, and you're in my space right now.
What if I walked into a room? Everybody's watching the football game. I show up a little bit late. It's middle of the first quarter. I walk in, and then I just open my mouth, and that sound just comes out of my mouth. I don't even have to move my mouth. It just comes out fully formed.
That would be kind of a cool prank.
Kind of.
Like, I know you could orchestrate that. You have the audio equipment. You have the mini-to-mini. Mm-hmm. Like, just next time there's going to be a football watching party or something, you set up some weird system by which you're able to control that sound happening in your house. And then you just mouth it. But then you just don't comment on it at all. You wait for everyone to be like, have we been smoking too much weed right now?
I think it would be truly terrifying if somebody came in and it actually seemed like the audio was coming from the mouth and not just like, you know, the surround sound.
Okay, what about this one? What do you think the seagulls are saying when they say this very cacophonous sound.
Oh, wow.
That's kind of terrifying.
That's very terrifying. Did they, I think one of them just found a bag of barbecue-flavored Fritos and is yelling, barbecue-flavored Fritos, which are kind of rare these days, and everybody's getting totally really excited about that.
They're like, are you kidding me, guys? Terry found barbecue Fritos.
Are they the spiral kinds? No, they're original. That's what? Like the, I didn't know they still made those.
That's like the biggest thing that can happen in the Siegel community on a given day.
And the Andrew community, frankly. I miss those things.
The overlaps between the Andrew and the Siegel community are there are more of them than I was expecting going into this quiz.
Yeah.
You're not exactly right, but give yourself a bell for a good guess. Okay. That's actually the sound they make when there are eagles about. That is the sound for a bald eagle disturbance.
Okay.
Bald eagles are the glaucous or glaucous winged gull's biggest nemesis and predator, eating eggs, chicks, and adults. As bald eagle populations have increased in the Pacific Northwest, the gull population has declined. They typically respond to eagle threats with a long call, but with thousands of gulls crying out at once, the din can be cacophonous. That's interesting to me because maybe gulls are too low on the food chain, but I have seen many an eagle harassed by a crow, like a couple of crows flying after a bald eagle, chasing it off. And I'm always like, does the bald eagle not realize how much bigger it is than the crows? But it's not even the bald eagles, which are kind of like they're kind of the cows of the sky. I think they're kind of not the brightest, but maybe even they are smart enough to not be menaced by seagulls that are smaller than them.
Okay, so we're giving that one to me. Barbecue flavored Doritos. I'm sorry, Fritos versus there's a seagull in the area.
Yeah. Okay. How about this one? I'm jumping around here a little bit.
Lower, somewhere thoughtful. Oh, I know.
Okay.
I know this because I had a similar conversation this weekend. They are talking about how surprising it is that the latest Star Wars movie is going direct to streaming, totally skipping theaters.
Yes. And that the trailer is playing during Monday Night Football.
That's right. Or I saw it.
Are you ready for some Jedis?
Are they going to play an extended one? Because that's why it was on my mind. I saw the commercial for it. I saw a trailer for it during the Seahawks game yesterday. Seahawks, not Seagulls.
Yeah. No. Yeah. I don't know anything about that sort of thing, Andrew. Like, I don't know what Star Wars they're on. I don't know who's fighting who. Like,
all I know is, you know, and I can say this with great authority, is clearly they are protecting the brand and making sure that they don't spread it too thin in an effort to squeeze every last frickin' dime out of this franchise.
I think people, we have, of course, listeners that are, including my little brother, DFTB, really, I think, is pretty immersed in the Star Wars verse, as is, interestingly enough, Camaro Kev. Like, Camaro Kev definitely knows a lot about that world. And so we have purists out there, I think, that could weigh in on this more than I can. That being said, it feels to me like them rolling that trailer out during Monday Night Football is just that sort of – that perfectly – I think that perfectly captures – where that franchise is at, right?
Oh, I didn't know what you meant, but you meant, first of all, you keep saying Monday night, so they released the big one last Monday, and now I just saw like residual runs this weekend, or are they releasing a bigger one?
I thought it was coming out on Monday Night Football.
Maybe they're going to play a bigger, longer one, but the only reason I know about it was because I saw a commercial for it during the Seahawks game yesterday. So a commercial is running, but maybe they're going to run a bigger, fancier one.
But was the commercial a trailer? Was it like the full?
I don't know. It seemed like a pretty big production, but I don't really know. I was just like,
the funny part
is
the listeners, the people hearing this know more about the issue than we do because we're recording this Monday afternoon. If in fact they're rolling out some version of Star Wars of the trailer during Monday Night Football, the idea that the WJ verse, the Hank Williams Jr. verse, and the Star Wars universe are overlapping. Honestly, though, look, we're talking about a movie franchise that at some point transitioned hardcore into just trying to sell toys like Ewok dolls. So it's not like it was some indie movie that then got big. It's like it's always been a huge space opera. So maybe it being on Monday Night Football does make sense.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out the origin of this. It looked like the actual trailer debuted in August, but they're going to do something maybe during Monday Night Football. I'm not exactly sure, but I see what you're saying. It's not like this. Well, the thing is, Star Wars never set out to be like to appeal to a small nerd community, right? Like that it didn't exist then. So it was always going for, you know, mainstream appeal, and then it caught it and became huge. So I don't know. And I'll say, like, I mostly like them. I actually think the last two installments, I don't even know if they were like part of the current arc or the Star Wars stories. Like, I generally find them enjoyable. There were a couple of side plots in one that I thought was just laughably bad with plot writing and acting. But for the most part, I still find them enjoyable. I'm not trying to crap on something other people love, but it does seem like it was such a special treat when these things would come out, and like you'd just be waiting. You'd get people like me who don't even really care that much, like really excited to go to the theater. And now it just sort of seems like they're just like, okay, we just got to like get as much money out of this right now as possible, you know, get it while it's hot, and then we're going to just kind of leave a husk of this franchise behind because there was something special. There was something special about it before, and now it's just kind of like we just got to shoot them out, just get as many out there as possible.
I do think that the J.J. Abrams ones, and again, I don't think they're even all J.J. Abrams anymore. Whoever's all the reboots and side plots and stuff, I do think the movies have gotten much better since they got out of George Lucas's hands.
Mm-hmm. Since the 90s.
Compared
ones.
To the kind of, the in-between ones, not the first three, but then the ones after that were seemed like they were not the greatest. Definitely. So, I watched Rogue One, and I liked it. I thought it was, I thought it was a cool movie. So, I do agree with you, though, that like there's something about the how many of the films they've made and how many different ways that the movies have splintered off. What the effect it's had on me, somebody who grew up obsessed with the movies, obsessed as a little kid, is that I just can't. I don't have an attachment point to the movies anymore. I don't know, like, oh, the next one's going to come out and they're going to like it's going to be the prequel to this thing, and I really want to know how that ends. It's like I've totally lost the thread. Some of that has to do with just my like lack of attention to detail and my inability to follow like anything. But it does seem that they sort of, with making so many different versions of the movie, they kind of diluted the brand a little bit for somebody like me, to where I just don't know. I don't know who's fighting who and what universe and who's going to grow up to be what.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just totally confused by the plot of the movies. And so every once in a while, like my brother said, yeah, Rogue One's a really good movie. Watch it. And I did. And it was a really good movie. So it's not like I'm against. But, you know, it's funny because it's the same reason I don't know any of the Avengers movies. They're all of these franchises are just, because I never get on board at the first stop, I feel a little bit like when they're on the sixth Avenger movie, like I honestly don't really know what Thanos is. Mm-hmm. I know he's a bad guy, but that's what I could tell you about. And I know that Cable Thanos makes really great videos about the Seahawks. Mm-hmm. That's it. Like, I don't really, I, so it's like once I kind of miss the beginning of one of these things, it feels very not welcoming to me.
Do you know why that account, why that guy called himself Cable Thanos, by the way? Because I stumbled on this accidentally a while back. Do you know that it's actually more instances than you would think, but they tend to be kind of smaller characters. But there are instances in the Marvel Universe where you have one actor who played one character in one movie and then years later would come back and play a different actor in a different movie. And Josh Brolin played both Thanos and wait, am I right about this? I think he also played somebody named Cable in Deadpool. I think that's
okay.
Right. So
that's
I'm pretty, but now, oh God, as I'm saying that, I'm like getting super nervous. But why Josh Brolin prefers playing Thanos over Cable is a headline from Cinema Blend from several years back. So it sounds like it's one of those situations where Josh Brolin plays two different Marvel characters, Thanos and Cable, and then that wackadoo guy who makes those crazy Seahawks videos and now works for Russell Wilson, I believe, called himself Cable Thanos.
Oh, that's funny. I love those. Those are the dankest of videos.
Dankest deets? Dank deets?
Yeah. The dankity deets, maybe? anyway, So What you thought, Andrew? I forget now what you even guessed this sound was. But
what are we doing?
Was it Star Wars related?
Oh yeah, were the birds discussing how the newest Star Wars movie is going directly?
You're exactly
to streaming?
Right. Okay, that's great. Literally exactly what the seagull is saying.
Great.
Actually, that is a seagull. That's called a choke, and a seagull that's warning intruders: get out now, or you will be attacked. And they do say it in kind of a vaguely Schwarzeneggian kind of way.
I didn't hear that. I didn't hear
that.
Down
is the time, the farmer's field. Okay, here's one that I know is near and dear to your heart, Andrew. What are these seagulls saying when they're doing this?
Oh man, what a world! Do these seagulls listen to TVTL? How do they even know this?
What are they saying?
They're saying how the usual driver who used to pick up my garbage at the curb actually got a new job picking up trash over on Mercer Island, which is why I have been having issues with the city picking up my garbage. That's amazing.
And they actually know a guy who can help you, too.
Wow.
They're going to tweet his phone number to you so you can also have one more person on the inside working on it.
They're going
to
tweet it at me. Like a tweet.
This, my friend, is the seagull copulation call.
Why is that near and dear to my heart? Are you saying I'm a sexy man?
Undercover sex man. That's you.
Yes.
The copulation call is used when a male mounts a female. You're hearing it, Andrew. It's happening.
Must be the day before Thanksgiving.
There's kids. I got to stop that before it reaches its conclusion. There are kids listening.
Wow.
That was building to a fever pitch.
Right.
The copulation call is used when a male mounts a female. Three associated calls can be heard here in this clip. A high-pitched call associated with head tossing. A courtship behavior used by both sexes before the male mounts the female. A rapid rhythmic grunting sound by the male that is much louder. And a quieter, high-pitched fweet by the female heard in the background. That bears striking resemblance to the human version of that. I didn't read that all the way through before I started playing. And I'm sorry, little kids, that now you know what it sounds like when seagulls are mating. But if only that would have been the song Prince wrote, would have been a pretty different world. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm just like my mother.
Don't finish that.
Softly fweeting in the background.
Okay, that was better than I thought.
What scat singing did I just recreate that laugh? this woman in Illinois named Maritza Sibbles had put her 18-month-old son to sleep on Friday night when she noticed something on the baby monitor that stopped her cold. This is an article from the Washington Post written by Brittany Shamus. Snuggled up beside her child was what looked like the ghost of a baby. Alarmed, the Illinois mother of two crept into her little boy's room and shined her phone's flashlight in the crib. Nothing was there. She spent a sleepless night sharing the photo with family, friends, and parenting groups on Facebook, telling herself there must be some kind of logical explanation, but what is it? The next morning, she got the answer. By the way, she called her husband. Let me get to that part of the story. I believe her husband might have been working the overnight shift, and her husband was trying to figure out from wherever he was what it could have been, and he was asking maybe if it was drool or if it was just some kind of weird, I don't know, inconsistency in the sheet. None of those things explained it. She put this post out on Facebook on one of her mom's groups. Hey, do you guys see this baby? It's really creeping me out. Well, finally, the next day, she figured out what it was. What do you think it was? Have you read this article yet?
No, I haven't. I haven't seen the image either. So she took a photo of what it looked like on the baby monitor, but when she went to
take
a
photo in
person.
Yeah, the baby cam was showing a baby's face next to her kids. Yeah.
What?
Then she went
it?
In there and shined her light on it, didn't see anything. She wrote online that she could barely sleep. She was freaked out. She figured out the next day what it was. The tag on the mattress has a picture of a baby on it. Like a photo, a huge photo of a baby.
Okay.
And when she covered the mattress with the sheet, the picture of the baby was coming through the mattress ever so faintly that the baby monitor picked it up. But when she went in there in person and shined her phone light on it, she couldn't see it.
Because it was almost too much light with her phone, but it was just enough. Oh, that's interesting. Oh, that's kind of creepy, though. I don't go in for, like, ghost stories and the like. I don't believe in the supernatural. Mm-hmm. But even as you're telling that, though, there's something in, like, the hair on my arms was still going up a little bit when you were talking about it. You can't help it.
I am very not, I'm like you. I don't really believe in ghosts, and I just don't believe in the paranormal very much. I believe in listening to radio shows about the paranormal late at night when I'm driving around. But when, by the way, this has like been liked on Facebook like 500,000 times. It's been shared hundreds of thousands of times. Once the sort of full story came out, which included her figuring out what was going on with it, and one of the things that's interesting was people apparently most people were just thinking it was kind of funny, but then some people were like giving her shit about it, like how could you be so dumb? But I have to say, this is one of the few times where I'm like, I understand why this kind of freaked you out.
Did they investigate whether or not it was seagulls playing a prank? Because I could see that being something too. I actually have...
This is actual this is actual audio. Oh, do you have some too?
No, let's hear yours. See, they're saying, we got that lady good, right? This is the audio from afterwards.
Yep, that's exactly this. Yeah, that's called Yelp, which is used when a predator is getting close to the gull. The head and the neck are upright, although when the call is admitted, the head and the neck move a little bit forward. So if you hear that, you're in danger of copulating with a seagull.
Oh, no.
You need to go the other direction.
Yeah.
I understand. You had some audio, too?
That's literally a seagull. No, that you played the audio. I was going to play it.
You son of a gun. How dare you. Now do you, like, but now do you recognize the true majesty of my title for that segment? It's literally a seagull.
Now I do, yeah. I mean, now we got to start using that drop a lot more, though, so retroactively I will know exactly what you're talking about. All right, I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now, but have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again
with the seagulls. It was a seagull. Oh, man, it's not from a seagull.
That was pretty good. Remix on the fly.
Uh-huh.
I like it.
Real time.
Let me play one voicemail for you today. We almost played this during our V-mail frenzy the other day. I thought this was interesting. You were... can't remember if our listener Carolyn sets this all up in the voicemail, but you were talking about New Zealand, or was it a town in New Zealand? No, New Zealand has basically eradicated all of its rats, right? And isn't there a European city?
No, it's having rat problems.
Oh, okay.
And it's because it's Zealandia is an island, and the rats are an invasive species. It's, I believe, it's up in Canada, the exact province.
Right.
Is it Alberta? There's a Canadian province that has pretty much rat-free for a long time, which is kind of incredible.
Well, I thought this was very interesting because you were telling that story, and I thought, oh, that's interesting to totally eradicate an entire species from a community. Is that good for the ecosystem? Like, I don't like rats. I don't want to look at rats. I don't want them running over my feet as I walk down the street. I don't want them sharing my bed with me, clearly. But I was like, but there must be a reason to have rats. Like, is it ever good to totally eradicate a species like that? Well, I got this We got this fascinating voicemail from Carolyn.
Hi, friendos. This is Carolyn in Encinitas. I was calling because I listened to Friday's episode today. I'm a little behind. And you were talking about rats and how New Zealand is trying to go rat-free by 2050.
See, just for the record, I did not have to recap any of that. She took care of it for us.
And then Andrew was saying something about, well, rats must have some role to play in the ecosystem, and maybe we shouldn't get rid of all rats. And I got super excited because I did my PhD studying the impacts of invasive rats on island systems in Alaska. And so I know about this topic, and I wanted to call in and share. Black rats and brown rats, also called the Norway rats, are both native only to Asia. And so everywhere else they've spread in the world, they're invasive and they don't belong. So it's important to eradicate them from wherever they've become invasive, because they can do things like kill all the native birds or impact the native food webs or ecosystems, and it's really bad for the places that they've been introduced to. So it's good to get rid of them. Some of the work we did resulted in getting rid of them off of islands in Alaska. And then the other thing, Luke and Andrew, you guys were wondering if anyone advocates for the rats, and yes, they do. My lab had a program many years ago to get rid of rats on one of the islands in California, and there were lots of people advocating for the rats, and that's still kind of an issue. They don't understand the conservation problems that the invasive rats cause, and so they advocate for the rats and try to prevent their eradication, which you can totally understand because they're so adorable. Whenever I was working with them on the islands in Alaska, they were super cute, and I loved them, and I wasn't weirded out by them. They're wonderful to be around, especially when you're on an island with no people, and they're just another wild animal. But they are doing terrible destruction to the ecosystems, so they did have to go. Anyway, I love the show. It was great to see you guys on the boat, and keep it up. Talk to you later. Bye.
So there you go. It's a lot in
there. I guess that the science is, or the whole thing about an invasive species is, because part of my question is like, well, everything was an invasive species at some point. I mean, everything was an evolution of something else, and then it had different abilities. But the idea is that if everything's evolving along together, then the would-be prey are developing ways to avoid the predators, and everything is kind of everything is equalizing out or working itself out to one degree or another. And then when you throw something in that the whole system has not been able to prepare for, that's an invasive species.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, I mean, how do you feel about that, Caroline, saying that when you're alone on an island full of rats, that's when you really get some good QT with them? I actually don't know that if I had to be on an island full of rats that I'd want to be alone. Like, it doesn't seem like that's where I'm going to have my best like a turnaround when it comes to seeing rats differently. Like, Andrew, you don't like rats? What we're going to do is we're going to put you on an abandoned island. You'll be the only human being surrounded by rats, and you'll come off that island feeling completely differently about them.
I would totally feel different about them, because what's gross about a rat is when they're crawling out of a sewer carrying a, you know, half a crust of pizza or something. Yeah, I was going to say something grosser, and I stopped myself. Yeah. So you're welcome, America. But, like, it's the context of rats, I think, in our lives, is that they're usually around garbage. They're scurrying from point A to point B. If you see a rat out in nature where it's just doing its thing, I think that's much less gross.
Yeah, I could see that, certainly. But and just an island
like,
of
if
rats.
If I was like that listener. Yeah, there is actually a place called Rat Island near Port Townsend. It's just this tiny little thing. I used to go around there with my boat. I never saw any rats, though.
Kind of like Duck Island. I've never seen a duck on Duck Island.
Mm-hmm. I've seen a half pipe there once for a precious few moments before they made them dismantle it and pay a bunch of money for doing something fun.
Mm-hmm. I know. I saw pics. I never saw it in person. All right. You have a plane to catch. You got to go down to La La Land so you can make it in pictures, right?
Yep. I'm getting so close. I've got a meeting with Louis B. Mayer. I'm ready for my close-up. I think it's really going to come together for me.
Well, good luck. If you do end up booking yourself into a picture, I hope we can continue to do TBTL together. If not, I guess I'll just join you in the movies.
Well, the other thing is, that's a great setup for, can we go out with that Belle and Sebastian song? Dylan in the movies?
Yeah, of course.
Did we just play that too frequently?
We
too
do play it all the time, but I mean, does that
what's
matter?
What's another movie? What's another movie related?
Isn't there? Oh, well, I'm not going to play that. Well, what if we played the original of Act Naturally? What was the original version? I don't like the Ringo version, but the original was like an old country song, right?
Does anybody? Yeah.
They're
gonna
Buck
put
Owens?
Me in the movies. Buck Owens, that sounds about right.
Okay, let's do this. Here we go.
Okay. That is going to wrap things up for today. We will be back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio. I will be checking in from Los Angeles, from probably my trailer on the set of my latest Western.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it.
Bucky the Burbs, I think, mm-hmm. is my... Nah. I gotta work on my Western name.
Yeah, because you're going to find yourself in the wrong kind of movie if you're going with Bucky the Burbs. Like, just be very careful.
Be a lot of seagull copulation, among other things.
Nom de plume. Speaking of, should we call the show Say No to Strugs, which I like, or The Dankest Deets?
Or I like Dankest Deets, or what about The Strugs Is Real?
The Strugs is real.
The Strugs are real, or just Say No to Strugs. Oh,
I like
right.
Say No
just
to
say
Strugs.
No to Strugs.
Yeah,
yeah. Let me okay. say maybe say just say no because I kind of missed the. I think that I forgot what the joke even was.
Yeah, I forgot the just. What else is that's it? Better? Good. All right.
Okay. Perfect.
Good work.
Well, thank you, Mr. Walsh, and thank you everybody for listening. And we will see you tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio. Until then, enjoy your Tuesday. Stay dry if you're in the Northwest. Stay cool if you're down in SoCal with me. And please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
We'll make the scene about a man that's sad and lonely and begging down upon his bended knee. I'll play the part, but I won't need rehearsing. All I'll have to do is act naturally. Well, I'll bet you I'm gonna be a big star. Might win an Oscar, you can't never tell. A movie's gonna make me a big star, 'cause I can play the part so well.
Power out.